Okay. Thank you so much for inviting me, Scott. I think it's so great. You guys are so lucky to have Scott. He just doesn't stop until he knows how to do everything, until everything makes sense. And that is so great because these principles, they work so well. Usually when I see people have problems, it's because they're not clear on what these principles are and how to use them. And I see people do 100 times the work they have to do because they're doing something that's not this. So I started off in Al-Anon about 20 years ago. So I started off in a trauma-based addiction. I did not understand the steps at all. I thought they were gonna teach me how to handle my life better, like better coping skills or something, you know. And I remember because it wasn't going well. That is not what happened. I remember the moment I realized this was going to be different, but what really clarified things for me, by the grace of God, I ended up wandering into an open AA meeting. I won't take time to tell that story. I should probably say, I have 12 years continuous sobriety from my bottom lines in this program. That's just be helpful, I guess. And this is what I saw. I had been trying to manipulate and change myself. I thought, okay, I'll just identify these defects of character and I'll fix them, or I'll identify the things that make me mad or scared that came as a result of how I grew up. And then I would do the opposite, right? I didn't understand. I had a spiritual sickness that was created as a response to the emotional trauma of my upbringing, and it had become an addiction. It may have had a psychological cause, and it may have psychological symptoms, but if something's an addiction, step one, two, only God, only the power of God can change it. And when I understood that, then I understood something else. Well, then how do you get that? Clearly, I believed in God. I was praying. Clearly, praying and believing in God doesn't get people sober. Otherwise, we wouldn't have priests in AA meetings, right? How do I get sufficient power? And that, once I saw that was the point, the steps were all about power. You know, Bill Wilson says, lack of power is our dilemma. I have a spiritual sickness over which I am completely powerless. I need more power than the average bear. And what he says is, okay, you need power. The first thing you have to do is find out what's blocking you off from the power of God. God obviously has power. He's obviously here. How come I don't have enough of it? And I'm going to read you I'm going to give you some page numbers, just so you know I'm not making this up. The first one is page 64, which obviously goes along with the fourth step, but in the AA Big Book, and it says, people do their first step, second step, third step, and a lot of people stop there. And then it says, though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be the rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our addiction was but a symptom. We had to get down to causes and conditions. Blocking us from what? Blocking us off from the power of God. And all we have to do is, when I found out, this is the aspects of self are what are blocked. It says, be convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us We considered its common manifestations. Resentment is the number one offender. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. And I remember going, you mean that's all I have to do is write this stuff down on a piece of paper? I've been fighting with it and losing for a while. And that is how we get the power from God. Is as I start writing down aspects of myself, what am I angry about? What am I afraid of? They're blocking me off from God. They're not bad. We're supposed to have a self, right? That doesn't mean those things are bad or that we're supposed to get rid of them. All I have to do is write them down and read them to somebody. And then we'll go to the, just to give a summary, on page 663, there's six spiritual principles. These were the six principles that were brought to Bill Wilson. Complete deflation, that's step one. Stop trying to control the uncontrollable. Dependence and guidance from a higher power, step two and three. Moral inventory, confession, restitution, and continued work with other alcoholics. Not writing down the aspects of self that I have will keep me from getting the power that I need from God. Not admitting, they use the word confessing, that will keep me blocked off from the power I need from God. Hurting other people, that will block me off from the power I need from God. So that's why the first task is to, all we have to do is write down and read to people what's blocking this off from God. That was a revolutionary idea for me. I don't have to fix it. I don't have to feel bad about it. I don't have to repress it. I just have to write it down on a piece of paper and read it to somebody. That can unlock so much power. Now, I was stunned. I was stunned by that. And like as Scott knows, it invites so much power that I'll often start newcomers off that way. They'll walk in the door, they'll just, all right, they're just miserable. So on a scale of 1 to 10, 10, you know, 10 being the most distressed you can imagine, what number do you have right now? And they go, 12. I said, okay, got a pen, a piece of paper? And I go, yeah. I know this doesn't sound like it's going to make any sense. I know it sounds like it's not going to do anything at all. Write down three things you're mad about. They don't have to be deep. They don't have to be profound. They just have to be true. I don't care if they got your order wrong at the drive-thru. They didn't have your shoe size at the department store. As long as they're true, that's all that matters. They write them down. Okay, now read them to me. Usually people elect to be more intimate than that, but it doesn't matter. And then write down three things you're afraid of. You know, I don't know, whatever it could be, you know, losing a soccer game, looking bad, never being able to get sober. And I go, okay, write that down, read that to me. And I go, okay, scale 1 to 10. 10 being the most distressed you can imagine. 0 being not distressed at all. What number comes up for you? And they go, I'm like a 6. And that's the power of God coming in to give us relief. Not because he didn't want to, but because those aspects of self were blocked off. And often, I go, okay, now do that again tomorrow. Do that for 3 days. And tell me how you feel. Because every time we do that, we get rid of a little bit of what is blocking us off from the power that we need to not drown in our addiction. And one of the reasons I start off with that is in a trauma-based addiction, we have, it's so painful. It's so overwhelming. It's not like alcoholism where you have a drink, you put down alcohol. There may or may not be a full and functioning person under there. When I put down my addictive, obsessive, compulsive behaviors, underneath is the hurt person that needed those behaviors to survive. It's why it's so much more painful. It's why the withdrawal is more painful. It's why step work is more painful. We almost need the power that we can get from the steps to do the steps, which is why I'm bringing this up now. A lot of times when I help people, you know, it says you can see right there on page, that next page, 64. You know, I mean, it really doesn't look that hard. Mr. Brown, I'm resentful at his attentions to my wife. He may get my job at the office. This does not look like very deep or challenging material. But for us, it's sort of going to be challenging material. And time again, I've seen people, they think that their four step has to be, okay, the sponsor gives them a sheet of 125 questions of every horrible thing that's ever happened to them or every horrible thing that's ever they've ever done. Here, get back to me in a month, you know, which usually doesn't, people give up, they relapse, they decide never to do a four step again. That's a protocol. That's not a principle. If while someone is going through this process, they start to lose power, they can pick up any one of those other principles and get power. As they're working, is this making sense, Scott? I just want to check in with you.
Yeah, this is beautiful, Jane. This is exactly perfect.
Okay, and the reason I say that is we almost need the power of these principles to get through withdrawal. We almost need the power of these principles to get through our first step inventory, which is why what I was going to do is clarify what those principles are. You know, people say, well, we're supposed to do them in order. Yeah, well, where'd you read that? It's people make up stuff, you know, and then they keep it from working. The value of understanding a spiritual principle, it's the difference between working in a toaster factory and being an electrical engineer. If you work in a toaster factory, you know how to build a toaster. But unless you need to make toast or Pop-Tarts, you don't have anything to offer anybody. If you're an electrical engineer and you understand the underlying principles, you can build anything. And you can apply those principles to anything from a cell phone to a space shuttle. Because that's another problem with the trauma-based addiction. It plays out so differently for everybody. Our addiction is tailor-made as a response to the emotional trauma of our past. The pattern of behaviors of sex and love addiction, it means in order to survive, we either had to do this to protect ourselves from horrible abuse, or we had to do something else as the only source of nurturance and connection available to us. And it has become a pattern of behavior over which we have no power. And we can use those, so it's sneaky. I can't, quote-unquote, do experience, strength, and hope, but a principle will work for anything, for anyone, whether I was unlike them or not. And Scott can also tell you, as people in our, you know, our phone meetings, they have all different, they come from all different kind of places. Their addiction plays out all different kind of ways. And my response is always the same. You got a pen and a piece of paper. Are you willing to write down three things you're resentful about and three things you're scared of and read them to me? Because the solution is the same. The problem has an infinite number of ways to play out. My reaction to the process of recovery has an infinite number of ways to play out. But it's really helpful to only have 6 principles, because then I have a very, very short list of responses to whatever problem I have. And I know this is on the 4th step, but I want to go back to the, and you see, obviously, I wanted to cover a lot of material. Oh, my. I think I'm taking more than half an hour.
Hey, Jane, we've got plenty of time. Do not let
okay.
time. We've got plenty of time.
Okay. So this is, all right, well, sometimes people say, where did I get lost? Oh, yeah. We have this, like, very short list of responses. And this is what you're going to see no matter what the problem is. You're triggered. You want to act out. You want to get a divorce. You're angry. You're scared. You feel ashamed. You're having problems at work. I make you a promise. Applying these 6 highly, completely, 100% doable things will always make whatever's in front of you better. It will reduce your distress, it will give you clarity, and it will invite a power to maybe not react in a way that won't work out for you more. I'm not saying that people are going to get struck sober by spending 30 seconds on each of these things, but you will start to see a difference. I'll give you an example. I've seen this a lot of times. Somebody comes in, they're working on their 4th step, and they'll say, I'm going to act out. I can't take this. I said, well, she goes, did you read it yet? No, I'm waiting for my sponsor. I said, well, you know, we invite power by inventorying, but we invite power by admitting. If you feel overwhelmed by part of it, just take one of the other actions on the list. Why don't you just read me some of it? It doesn't have to be personal. Just read me some stuff. She means I can't do that now? Yeah, you don't have to wait. Did you read the line where it says, oh, yeah, wait a month until your sponsor's available to enact a spiritual principle? It's not there. And so she read me a little bit. She read me a little bit. Seriously, it didn't take more than 5 minutes. I said, how do you feel now? She said, oh, my gosh, I feel so much better. I go, you know what? And then tomorrow, you know, you have a recovery partner, just read it in little pieces. Because every time we inventory our resentments and our fears, we remove something that's blocking us off from God. Every time we read what we wrote to someone who shares our spiritual sickness, we remove something else that blocks us off from God. And that, she was able to make it through all her steps. Because we can't necessarily wait until we're all done to get the power of the other actions, or we won't make it through the 4th step. I don't think there's any doubt in anybody's mind that a 4th step correlates with sobriety, long-term sobriety. I'm pretty sure if you sat there, you know, duck, duck, goose, 4-step, 4-step, sober, sober, you know, it correlates. But because our 4th step is so painful, it's we may need actually the power of those other principles to survive the 4th step. So like sometimes if somebody goes, I'm working on my 4th step, or I'm going through withdrawal, either way. I say, well, you know, I do the inventory. I say, okay, well. And I don't talk about prayer much because my experience is people pray. People pray and they relapse. Usually, I don't hear people writing a ton of inventories in relapse. Not often. Or if they do, they get right back on, you know. So sometimes I say, well, they go, okay, do that. They go, still don't feel very good. I go, well, let's upload another one, which is the reason that we write an 8th and a 9th step. It's not because we're terrible, horrible people. We did bad things. It's not that. It's not because we want to fix our life and, you know, get it over with. It's not that. Hurting people blocks us off from the power of God. And if we admit that and do what we can to fix it, we invite the power of God. And we don't have to, that'll work whether or not You don't have. I'm not talking about your big long ninth step list. What I wouldn't even worry about now. You know, sometimes people say, "Well, I still feel really, really bad." They go, "I feel better, but I still feel bad." I go, "Okay, is there anybody that you've hurt their feelings in the last 24 hours? Maybe you were critical. Maybe you lost your temper. Maybe you didn't tip a waitress." And they go, "Well, yeah, I was kind of irritable with my wife, or I was kind of, grumpy with the girl at the bank." I go, "Okay. I open to this, just pick up the phone, call the girl at the bank and say, I was disrespectful to you. That's never okay. I want to apologize for that. Is there any way I can make that up to you?" And usually people are like, "Oh, okay. Okay, hang up the phone and see how you feel. See if that angry, ugly, I hate my life feeling has dropped." The point of that is not because you really care. You don't have to care about the girl at the bank. You don't have to be trying to fix that for some other motive. In fact, it can't be for any other motive. The motive is because you're powerless over your addiction and you need power from God and you're willing to apply one of the basic spiritual principles to get that power. So sometimes that will give people enough power so then they can finish their fourth step. And then there's the other one, which is service. The point of service, okay, those first three are how to get rid of this blocking us off from God. Service is how to invite more power from God. And the principle of service is you help someone who cannot pay you back. And usually you get a lot more power if you help someone else write an inventory. You listen to their inventory. You help them figure out how to make an amend, even a teeny tiny baby one, so they can get enough power to not act out, to finish their fourth step or whatever. I'll say to people, I go, is this a good way to get started? I go, "How do I get started? I'm drowning in pain and craving, obsession, compulsion." Well, when you wake up, that little inventory we just did, I always have them do it right there if they're willing, because I want them to have the experience of relief. The point of these steps is not to get through them. The point is relief. I'll tell you a secret. If they're not inviting relief, you might want to look at it again, because the power will move in so fast. People don't even have to wait minutes, It usually happens right away, even after a six-line inventory. And then I go, "Okay, this is what I want you to do. I know this sounds like it's not going to do any good at all. Wake up in the morning. Do you have any friends in the program?" "Yeah, I have a number." Write out three resentments and write out three fears. Read them to your recovery buddy. If they don't pick up the phone, just leave it on their voicemail. It'll work anyway. It's not about who's on the other end of the phone. It's that you were willing to admit. You did the admitting. It's not about the advice they're going to give you. It's that being willing to do that will invite the power of God. Then go to a meeting stay after and see if there's a newcomer. If somebody's new, give him your number. Just stay out to be helpful. You can look for somebody to help. And people say, "Well, I'm just starting." I go, "I know. Nobody needs more power than somebody who's just starting, right? I mean, the horror of withdrawal is so terrible. We need all the power we can get." And when I was going through my total withdrawal, I was writing a 10-step of really strong 4-step every day. I called my sponsor every day. I was chairing 2 meetings a day. I needed the power. And that doesn't mean because I'm a super spiritual person. My addiction is so reality altering. I don't have like this impulse or that impulse. It's not like that. If I don't invite the power of God continually, I am in a completely different world where certain behaviors seem like a good idea. There's no way to manage it, really. And I want to read you one more summary on that about step four, because again, people have these ideas about what it is. It's like, okay, we're going to make this list, we're going to fix ourselves, we're going to talk about all the horrible stuff we did. Well, that's not step four. That's step eight and nine. The purpose of step four is to get some power from God by writing down and admitting the aspects of self that have blocked you up from God. That's the purpose of it. And, you know, people go, well, it says, what did I do wrong? I go, no, it doesn't. Look how it starts out. It starts out with resentment. Who do we have resentment about? People who hurt us. And people come from a trauma-based addiction. We are hurt a lot. So this is how you start your four steps. Tell me everybody who hurt. Just start out talking about people who hurt you. Tell me about people who hurt you. I will listen, I will believe you, and I'll be really nice about it. Okay, what's the second part of step four? Fear. Okay, tell me everything you're afraid of. Just tell me what you're afraid of. I will listen, and I will believe you, and I'll be nice about it. That's 60% of step four right there. It doesn't sound so terrible if you put it that way, does it? And then also, people talk about nothing matter that thoroughness, but if you look at how Bill Wilson describes our first moral inventory, he actually gives us a lot of leeway, and he just sees it as a starting point. And this is on page 70. He says, if we've been thorough about our personal inventory, we have written down a lot. We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies, for we look on them as sick people. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope that you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. And on that, I obviously have underlined a little star. Is the point of this, of the fourth step, is to have God remove whatever self-will is blocking us off from Him. And not only that, He's actually going to help you in this process to remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. This is just the beginning. We don't have to go all the way down to all these insights. It's commenced, begun. We have just started. Sometimes people say, well, I go, you know what? If you can't do a good one, do a bad one. Because you will get so much power. Even if all you do is write down three things, right? So write down three and then read it to somebody. And you're going to get a little power from that. Well, write down three more, you know. That's the purpose of the fourth step. Not to understand, but to get rid of the aspects of self that are blocking us off from the power that we need, the relief that we need, to have God come in and relieve our addiction. That's really the purpose of the fourth step. I mean, it's quite clear if you look through the literature, that's what it is. But I don't know how people got all this other, like, I don't know where they get that. I don't know where they get this idea about what it's supposed to be. And then they can't do it, you know. And then they don't have enough power, and then they get discouraged. And I don't want people to get discouraged because all these principles are 100% doable. Nothing I've described here is impossible. And people go, well, I can't do that. Okay, well, tell me what you can do. I'll help you. I'll help you find a way to do one of these things. And then that'll give you enough power to maybe do the next one. Then you'll get enough power to do the next one. I just need a starting place. So I think what I'm going to do now is stop there. And then if people have questions, I can answer those. Or if I miss something, let me know. How does that sound, Scott?
Sounds perfect. And if we have a little time, I'm gonna pry into one thing that you dropped into the other day. But let's go. Let's let everybody. I'm gonna open everything up for anybody who has any questions.
Okay.
What page is the six principles, spiritual principles? Is that in here?
It's there.
I'm sorry. I'm so used to muting myself after I talk. It is on page 263.
Thank you.
What you're seeing in the room is all of us guys got our books out and we're all like rattling over to the pages. So,
yeah. Oh, wait, one more page. I forgot about it. Well, you want to look at that page? That'd be great.
It's good. It's good. Go on.
Hey. 263 in it. I don't know. It's like, it's one of my favorite chapters, and I can never find it. Oh, 214. Once again, like, this may sound like a simplification, but what you're going to see is once you have those six principles, like, you'll see them everywhere. If you reread our Schley basic text, you'll see them everywhere. People assiduously ignore them in sharing, but they're there. On page 214, our Southern friend, it's one of my favorite stories, and again, here's a place where in one paragraph they describe our whole program. There are two guys in a mental hospital, two alcoholics in a mental hospital, and he's trying to encourage this one guy, and saying, you know, do you believe in God? He says, no, and then he asks me, if I'm willing to right all the wrongs I've ever done to anyone, no matter how wrong I thought the others were, am I willing to be honest with myself about myself and tell someone about myself? And am I willing to think of other people, of their needs instead of myself, in order to get rid of the drink problem? I'll do anything, I reply. Then all of your troubles are over. I think that's one of my favorite summaries of the six principles.
Any other questions?
Yeah, this is Ryan from Texas. Would you recommend going back, like, through your inventories with the same people or different people? I mean, that you kind of mentioned just sharing with different people. I kind of had a question about that because I've kind of done an inventory with one person, but I didn't know kind of what value or power there is to keep in that.
Well, the basic principle is, you know, being honest about myself, telling someone about myself, that will always give you power. It's nice to have a sponsor where you do the four steps, and then they know you really well, right? That's a value to that. But usually, particularly in a trauma-based addiction, the 10th step is so crucial to continue to take personal inventory. And so you may or may not have your sponsor available for that. This principle will work with anyone. If you have a sponsor that you really trust, that's really helpful, then obviously, hey, you're really lucky. A lot of people don't. Did I answer your question, or did you mean something else?
I did. I guess I remember now you're talking about your point is doing it and sharing it, but it doesn't really matter if they receive it necessarily.
Right.
Okay.
It's like people think if they can't get a hold of their sponsor, then they're not going to get the power that they need. And then they can't get a hold of their sponsor, and then they don't have the power they need when all they have to do is really pick up the phone and all they do is write down, start writing their resentment, start writing their fear. Hey, you know, can I just read this to you? You'll be power regardless of the person.
Thank you.
Regardless of whether they pick up the phone or not, yeah. Because sometimes you can't get hold of your sponsor, you know. Well, I can't. But that's okay. I already... this will work anytime I do it. So I can get power regardless of anyone, you know.
Scott from Texas. I'm just going to jump in and say I've watched this recipe. I've watched Jane do this recipe over and over and over. And it really doesn't matter what the problem is. It doesn't change. And it's this beautiful, simple little recipe. And it was completely cunning and baffling to me when I first looked at it. I didn't understand it. It was way too simple, and I just, and then Yoda did it to me, and I got a little power. And I was just amazed because I was about ready to blow my brains out one day. And I remember sitting on a job, on a horrible job, and talking to this little voiced woman that gave me great hope one day.
Well,
this is Ryan from Texas. Yeah, when I was doing the inventory, I think I sat for about 2 days with a blank piece of paper. You know, and it wasn't until I was given a sheet that was really easy, and kind of what I think you were describing, Jane, of hey, just write down three things, and then that sheet made it easy because I had a blank piece of paper. I didn't know what I was doing. But once I had a form, it was like, okay, just do this one thing. You know, it became, I did it in less than an hour, you know. But I'd stared at that paper for several hours. Nothing. So, that was one thing that really helped me, was just some sort of, I don't know if it was the right structure, I don't think it matters, but some sort of structure so I could start. Anyways.
Yeah, like, because people, like, they want to go, well, how's this going to end? I can't tell you how many times I've heard, I don't want to start my fourth step because I don't want to do my ninth step. And I mean, you know, when I was thinking way down the road, I go, you know what? If you finish your fourth step and your fifth step and you don't want to do your ninth step, I won't say a word about it. Because this is what I know. People get so much power from that, then they start to see the value of their amends. Amends look horrible until you've done your fifth step, you know. I'm not saying they look all that great after that, but they look much better. So I agree with you. You know, just giving people a starting place, I'm a fan. Well, one thing I didn't talk about, because I wasn't sure what people were interested in, also it's a whole other conversation, but is the... And the fourth column method is that, you know, my part, even though it doesn't really mention that in the big book. I did want to say one thing about that. For a trauma-based addiction, it's never going to be the seven deadly sins. It's not really going to be greed or pride or lust or sloth. It's not really going to be that. Because... underneath that is, like, say, pride, okay? It's not ever really pride. It's shame. It's having shame about needs, having shame about rejection, having shame about needing anything. That's the reason those words are not useful, is because they're not true. And people will start out with just calling yourself a bad name. Just calling yourself a jerk is not a successful fourth step. understanding how, what happened, my reaction to that is I needed to do that, be that, think that way to survive. I either needed it to protect myself from horrible abuse, or I needed it to connect in a dysfunctional environment where appropriate connections were not offered to me. And that, it's never going to be I deserved it. It's never going to be I caused it. It's always going to be at some level I had to do that to survive growing up. I think that's the next big difference between, I use the same solution, I use the same format, but the words that are going to end up in someone's fourth column are going to be quite different in a trauma-based addiction than in the big book. Thanks for reminding me about that. Anybody else have any questions, or are we almost out of time?
We're doing good. Anybody else got questions?
Hey, this is Jody in Wisconsin. Oh. I have a question. Is it okay if I jump in? Hi, Jane. I'm very grateful to get to be here with you, and I'm very, very grateful to Scott for bringing me here. I've been on meetings with you, as you know. And so here's my question is about the application. And so I'm working with sponsees who I'm taking through the steps pretty quick, within 3 weeks, usually, sometimes four. And so what I think is working about that, and that's finally what worked for me, because the other ways were not working for me at all, and I was wanting to die. So when I found that way, it saved my life. And I think the core of it is exactly what you're talking about, actually. So still, some people get really bogged down in the fourth step, and I think we can lose people still. Even in that way, we can still lose people in the fourth step, right? And so I think that's totally what you're speaking to. Like, we have to help people hook into that power really early on. So Scott and I have talked a little about this, and I know, you know, so I know we can start to hand people inventories early, like right away, first thing. And I know that's what you do, Jane, which is awesome. I'm inspired by, yet again, by what you're sharing. I also have heard some people speak about, there's a guy named Wally P. who's a big AA speaker. You can Google him. And he speaks about, like, getting people through all 12 steps in a day, do it in 24 hours, get them through. And he also, which is somewhat fascinating and mind-boggling in a certain way, but I think it's also getting at this. And the other thing is, he speaks about when you're taking someone through a fourth step, that you sit down with them and you actually, the sponsor holds the pen in their hand and does the writing, and the person just sits there and dictates. And he talked about how when he went through the steps, that's like what his sponsor did with him, which was what he needed, because he was just like, whatever, this is insane. I don't even think I'm crazy. You know, like, there's this great talk I listened to of him telling the story of, like, this guy's crazy, but I have no other hope, so I guess I'll do this crazy thing. You know, and then what happens, right, he gets hooked up with that power, and he gets better, right? And so he keeps going. So I think these are powerful things, and they're really working in me around how do I sponsor better? How do I keep sponsoring better? How do we not lose people? And I'm curious how you or other people are using this, you know, so, you know, maybe multiple people in the room can talk about that. Like, you know, is it mostly about handing people the little short inventory during steps 1, 2, 3, you know, 4, while they're working their big fourth step, you're daily sort of talking to them, and you're like, sort of like, okay, what are your 3 today? You know, or what do you think about this idea of, like, sitting down with them? If there's somebody who takes, let's say somebody who takes a week for each of the 3 inventories, like, that's really long, in my opinion. You know, like, that's dragging things out, and we start to get bogged down, and we start to lose people. So anyway, if anyone has any feedback on that, I'd welcome it.
Well, I do, actually. So thank you so much. I'm so glad you're doing that. Well, see, this is the difference between a principle and a protocol. A protocol says, you know, what questions, how long. A principle, once you understand the principle, I can tailor it to the need of the person. You know, particularly with SLA, where people have extremely traumatic backgrounds, I remember one time I just stayed on the phone with her like that. Said, okay, write down somebody you resent. Okay, read it to me. Okay, how did it affect you? Did it cost you money? Did it make you unsafe? Just write that down. Okay, write down somebody else. And also, I often have people, and they go, okay, I'm starting to dissociate. Okay, let's stop for today. You want to take tomorrow off? Hey, I'll be here I'll be here Wednesday. It's, the important thing is that I teach them the principle, I help them enact the principle, working within what they can do. Like, there's a really cool member, they said, you know what, the way I always start people off with resentments, usually people are mad, right? Because always everybody else. and they said, you know what, I cannot do that. Now, if I had insisted that they start off with resentments, because that's the way in the big book, I said, okay, fine, how about fear? Okay, I can do fear. And then I said, okay, well, let's do that. Is what it does is you'll get power doing anything on that list. I find something on that list that they can do, and they'll get enough power from that that they'll eventually be able to do the other one. I don't have any timing restrictions because some people, they'll start to dissociate or shut down, and I never push past dissociation. That is an indication that the mind, if I push it, it's going to start, that person's going to start to hurt themselves in some way. I always respect that. I respect their pacing. And we can always tell, right? You can tell if there's people that just don't want to do the work. Or you can tell if there's people that go, okay, I'm done. I'm like, okay, let me know. We'll do it again tomorrow. You can tell, right, if it's their defense is kicking in or if they just don't want to do the work. And you know what, in SLA, most people are willing to do the work. The thing is they're not clear what those actions are, and then it's kind of what you're talking about, which is people's pacing has a lot of variety to it because of their psychological defenses kick in. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
And then
thank you. And the question for me is because it's really just a matter of paying attention and listening to my higher power mostly, but that question of when someone's psychological defenses are kicking in, which is something I'm meeting with a couple of sponsees right now, and how best to support them through that. Because what they're needing is the power. It's totally exactly what you're saying. I get that. And what I'm hearing is I can look at that list of actions, you know, those six things that Bill talks about, and which one of them can I pull in at this moment?
Exactly.
I think that's
and
what
like
I'm
maybe,
hearing. Yeah.
I go,
yeah.
Well, you know what? Maybe you need a little more power. Like, do you feel like doing some service? And then
yeah.
That'll get it, you know what I'm saying? Or I sometimes prayer, people, I go, mm-hmm. Are you willing to pray for the willingness for God to give you the power to do that? Or, you know, do you owe somebody an apology? You know, I'll pick something off of that. Or, here's one, why don't you help a newcomer and ask them if they would like you to listen to their inventories? That'll help give you a lot of power, too. It's always going to be something on that very short list to get them power to do the part of the thing on the list they can't do. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Oh, sure. And, wow, that's so cool. You're sponsoring all those people. That's great.
All right, Jane. Anybody else got questions? All right, I got one. We had a conversation the other day, and you were talking about taking your little piece of paper and folding it into four corners and writing out your day. You were inventorying your day.
Well, the first thing I do is I write the classic 10-step. I write down my resentments, my fears, because the problem that I think I have when I wake up in the morning is not really the problem I have. I have to write that 10th step to even really clearly see what's going on. So I always do that one. And then I write an 8.5 by 11, you know, I turn it into quarters, and then I leave I draw two other lines, so there's kind of a strip in the middle. And then I, write down the things I think I have to do today, or say I have a particular problem, like to respond to my health, I write those down in one quarter. And then another corner I have, okay, what do I need to do for my spirituality? And then in another one, okay, what are sort of long-term things? And then as I write those out, then I start to see other things that have to be done, because I'm a physical being. I need to keep myself alive, you know. I have a spiritual sickness. I need to do recovery things. I have a spiritual project that I like to work on. And then I have sort of long-term problems that I need to lose sight of, because that's actually one of my defects of character, is I lose sight of it. I want to pick one and ignore the rest. I want to pick what has to get done today, and then ignore limitations or ignore that. So if I write down all four sort of aspects of my life and I look at it, it helps me keep track. Not just all different aspects, you know. It's like, you know, say we have stuff about work or family. If we divide it up that way, what we're going to see is that, okay, we have goals for work. We have things we have to do for work. Hey, we have goals for our family, our kids, our wife, our spouse, our boyfriend. Oh, okay, well, I have some concerns about this or that. We see that they all coexist, and it just gives me a holistic representation, an analog view of the sort of possibilities of the day. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. So I'm probably, as you know, I'm a drawer and maker of things. So I'll probably draw and make this and illustrate it and let you I'll send it to Jim, and Jim can get it to you so you can look at it and make any corrections that you might want to make, and we'll put this in our library of things.
Oh, that'd be great. Well, it's like, I think it's the human mind, it doesn't want to, you know, we can only hold on to 4 to 7 variables at a time. That's true. It doesn't matter how smart you are. If you're smart, you just kind of chunk it down. So what happens if we have 15 things to do that day in 4 different categories, something's going to fall off the edge of your temporal lobe's ability to have short-term memory. So, that helps me see, okay, these are all things that God cares about. God cares about my health. God cares about that. God cares about that. I don't have to sacrifice one for the other, because that is part of the trauma of my past. You got one of those things. You didn't get all of them. You had to sacrifice one for the other. And people don't have to sacrifice work for their family. They don't have to sacrifice their health for their work. They don't have, it's, that all those things matter, they all matter to God, and if they're in front of us, it's easier to kind of see that, if that makes any sense.
Yep. Thank you, Jane.
Sure. Anything else? It's like, I'm usually, like Scott will tell you, I'm more comfortable if somebody has a problem and they want me to help them write an inventory on it. But that's a really good starting place. And there's two other parts, I guess, it would just be too much material. But I think the trickiest thing, and Scott knows this is true, is after you write your resentments and fears, and then you have to write, okay, it affects my seeing that your part thing, and using that as a key for growth, ongoing growth in the 10th step, that's a whole other talk. And then understanding how to use amends for power, little teeny tiny amends for power, and have that build up to our larger amends. So those would be, there just wasn't time to address those, but just wanted to put those out there.
You may have to come back now.
Well, thank you so much for having me and inviting me. And
we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Sure.
I'm just very grateful that you would make time to do this.
One of my favorite things to do. Help people learn how to write inventories. It is, because I can't make anybody feel better. I can't make anybody be sober. But if I teach them how to write an inventory, then God will do it. And I like that. Okay, well, take care, everybody. It's so lovely to meet all of you. Gentlemen from Texas.
Thank you.